Good morning, Nick.
Hey, how are you?
Good. It's just the two of us today for the podcast.
The last time it was just you and me, we talked about like eight movies in an hour, so we have to beat that record, I guess.
Here's the problem. I was kind of sick this weekend, so I didn't really go see anything. So so you'll be doing monologues if we try to cover seven movies.
Well, I think I probably took longer to see everything that I've seen than you did. So we who knows what'll happen. That's the
Okay.
adventure of the podcast. And I haven't had coffee, so who knows what I'll say. I might just make shit up.
Okay, well, also, just so that you can feel sorry for me, so we'll start with a little pity party. So yesterday I wasn't feeling well at all, so like I didn't leave the house. This booming headache, right? I don't know why, because I wasn't not hungover or anything like that. And so I watched Grey Gardens. You know, just like laying in all my like pillows watching Grey Gardens. And so at one point in the movie,
Which is what half America thinks we do as gays.
so at one point in the movie, you know, when the cat is going to the bathroom behind the portrait, I look around at my apartment and it's like the dirty cat box, and there's just like it's just a total mess everywhere because I have just been like, you know, completely lazy, not feeling well, and then my cat is like meowing at me, and I'm like, oh my God,
It's happened.
it's already happened, and I'm not even an old lady who never leaves the house. But I'm working on it. I'm gonna get there.
We're gonna pull you back out of this. This is gonna be your day.
But I thought, oh my God, that's like, yeah, it's a total danger for me, becoming a shut-in.
You're at risk. Well, you know what will fix that is just going to go see an NWA movie.
Well, I was going to ask you, since I did not get out of the apartment as I intended yesterday, so I did not see it straight out of Compton. But I keep hearing only good things, so convince me to see it. Because it's really long, and it's about a topic I'm not really into.
It is kind of long. And like, I don't know that I thought it was essential, and it was definitely a movie that I liked more while I was watching it than I have while I've been thinking about it. I'm still glad I saw it, I have to say that. And like, there is some, I think the most exciting thing about it was just the kind of remounting of how freaked out everybody was by gangsta rap, and especially by them in the moment that they hit kind of around 1990. And I'd forgotten just about all the coverage of police surrounding concerts and cities trying to block them from showing up. I mean, it's for sure like, you don't need to have read that Dr. Dre and Ice Cube produced this themselves, because obviously there are so many scenes where only they understand correctly what is going on around them, or only they are just about the music and everybody else is about some bullshit.
So it's very love and mercy in that way.
It is totally
Like,
Love and Mercy to include Paul Giamatti being the like slithery manager who's not as much of an ally as he claims to be. So, yeah, they'll be in a DVD two-pack one day. Not Tupac, but a two-pack DVDs later in the day. Later.
Paul Giamatti has mastered a new niche, apparently.
It would seem that is now officially the Paul Giamatti role, in the way that, you know, strung out hookers used to be the Jennifer Jason Leigh role. Bad. Bad caretakers of musicians are Paul Giamatti.
They're gonna have to remake Jersey Boys to include him.
Oh my God, don't even say it. Not that I would know, since I have managed to, you know, have no Jersey Boy contact in my whole life.
Well, you are lucky. And just as I said this, I was like, wait, was he in Jersey Boys? Because
Yeah.
that's how typical
Maybe you just
the.
didn't see him. Maybe he was in the shadowy part.
But didn't he also have a role like that in Rock of Ages?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember him being in it. I don't remember anything about him.
I think it's the same type of role. So I think it's like three times now.
It's like his Cinderella Man character just went to the dark side.
Yeah. So he needs a his agent needs to talk to him, or he needs to talk to his agent.
Yeah.
Anyway,
The guys who play the three main dudes are all really good. I was especially the guy who plays Eazy-E, who I thought the movie might sort of slag off, but this is definitely a posthumous like kind of mea culpa to him. Mm. But the politics around gender are as bad as you've heard.
Okay. Well, one of the things that... oh God, what was I going to say about Straight Outta Compton? Shit, I've already forgotten. I'm sorry. So the gender politics were bad.
The gender politics are bad. In the first three scenes, two women get run over by a tank and knocked in the head with a door during a police raid. And then I forget what the awful thing is about women in the second one. And then in the third scene, Ice Cube's desire for a better life is manifested by his looking longingly out a bus window at white women in a Corvette. So, oh, the second thing is a mom who's like trying to keep her kid on the straight and narrow but has to slap him when he's being bad. So there's your archetypes. Here we go.
Well, it's kind of like the summer of celebrating 90s hip-hop then, because also Dope from earlier this summer.
Yeah, totally.
So it's a thing right now.
It's a thing. You got your whole range.
But until there's a Missy Elliott biopic, I'm not quite interested.
Until there's a Missy Elliott album, I'm not quite that interested. Right. Like, why are you starving us? But whatever. Yes. We can't even start that discussion again. I don't know that I'm convincing you to see it at all, but it's worth it if you go. It doesn't have to be on the top of your list.
Okay, gotcha. Well, you finally caught up with I'll See You in My Dreams.
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, good. Because you haven't loved the other one I wanted to talk about, Grandma. You didn't love that one.
That's true. Although I eventually, Grandma and Ricky and the Flash, by the time they were over, I felt fonder of them than I had during most of them. Mm. But I'll See You in My Dreams, I was just with the whole time.
Okay. So we've...
So when did you see it?
So we've both seen all three of those.
Yes.
So we'll have our, like, our old lady celebration right now.
And we hate to do that.
Yeah. It's so different than anything we've ever done before on the podcast.
It's like when Cosmo has the dating issue. This is the actress edition of the podcast.
It's like... Yeah, it's like copy and paste. Only the names do change sometimes. Okay, so I'll See You in My Dreams. I saw after it had already made quite a bit of money. And okay. I was like, wow, how is this... And by quite a bit of money, I mean like $3 million at the time.
Right. But, yeah.
But for something like that, which had like no press, that was a big deal. And it went on to make even more than that. Mm-hmm. So it's been quite a little word of mouth success for a certain crowd.
I couldn't believe it was still in the theater. It's not in Chicago, but I was in D.C. visiting my family and it's hanging on. And there were like 20 people in the theater. It was a matinee on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and when I went to it, I thought, "Oh, I gotta go now because it'll be leaving." And then it stayed for weeks after that.
Yep.
And so it's been a big success, especially for Blythe Danner, who never gets parts like that.
Totally. And especially since I can totally imagine the word of mouth at the level of "This was a really good movie, my lady friend, go see it." But it's not as though it's total wish fulfillment either, right? No, so no. I'm impressed that the word of mouth must be as good as it is.
Yeah, because it is actually quite melancholy.
Yeah.
And, you know, not necessarily happy endings and that sort of thing. But it makes room for different feelings, which is why it's good, I think.
Totally.
You know, because it has happiness in it and sadness and all those other things. But I thought the main rapport between Blythe and her sort of... Is he her friend, or what's going on between the two of them with the younger man?
Yeah.
Was really interesting and something I never see in movies.
Completely.
And it was like, it was so subtle to the point where I worried it was to the movie's detriment sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an extremely quiet movie. But it worked.
And I liked that the characters, you could tell were, it wasn't just the movie, but the characters were self-conscious of how cliched it would be to push it in a different direction in a way, even though there are all these moments where they're both kind of tempted to do that. Mm-hmm. I like the moment when he drives her home from karaoke and she's like, "Do you want some coffee inside?" And he's like, like, don't be an asshole. I'm making coffee. Like,
right. Yeah. That scene that really like stuck me in the gut was when he shows up at her house unannounced
Oh, God, totally.
And she has, you know, started dating Sam Elliott at that point. So she is
Yep.
with a man in the house. And the
Yep.
way she brushes him off, it was just so painful.
I know.
Because they had been getting so like close in a platonic, interesting way.
Exactly. Which I also liked because as much as you know, the movie's so much about her isolation, almost every time somebody drops by unannounced, you wish it wouldn't happen. You know, because like Mary Kate Place shows up at one point, and that doesn't feel good. And even the first time that the pool boy kind of finds her and it's embarrassing, like in the back of the house, like that's awkward. I liked all of that.
Yeah, so we recommend that. I believe it's on DVD next month.
Yeah, I think September 1st. But if you
Yes.
could swing it, I took my mom and two of her friends to see it, who are women in their 60s who have been single for a while. That's ideal as a way to see that movie.
So if you happen to have older single women in your life,
Yeah.
take them to a movie.
And you are pool boy age. That's the right movie to go to.
Even if you've never thought of yourself as a pool boy.
And nobody probably ever will, but
Because Martin Starr certainly never thought of himself as a pool boy.
yeah. That's true too. I also, one of my favorite laughs in that movie was just from the credits because of how June Squibb's agent had clearly been like, she's an Oscar nominee. She will be listed third. Like, okay. She's got this tiny little part, but like, boom, way up there. There's a hilarious, I'd never thought I'd see a, hilarious June Squibb smokes pot scene, and here it was.
Yeah, she's really working her niche like Paul Giamatti.
She is, no kidding.
So maybe we should talk about the two you liked less. One
Yeah.
of them I think I liked it more than I'll See You in My Dreams, but maybe not. They're all sort of they're all three of them have are great showcases, I think, for their actors, but not necessarily great movies. Ricky and the Flash. A lot of things about it don't work, but I really enjoyed it the whole time. So that's where I am with that one. I want everybody to go see it because I think it's really enjoyable and like most of Jonathan Demme's movies, very human. But I can see why people would be like, eh, about it.
Yeah.
Because
I would have,
it
yeah.
feels slight in a way that doesn't really make sense because there's actually a lot that happens in the movie. So that whereas with like Grandma and I'll See You in My Dreams, if you describe them that way, they are meant to be very small.
Yeah, that's true.
But this it feels like it has much a grand it its scale is much bigger, and yet it feels just as slight as they do.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I wonder if, because I don't know, how would you describe Rachel getting married in terms of big or small? Because I almost feel like if this were more successfully directed, it would feel smaller. And part of what I was, and like Rachel getting married feels, big in how well it handles its smallness, I guess.
Right.
But
Yeah, it's themes and emotions are supersized, but it's very intimate.
yeah. And I felt like, I mean, I'm not like asking him to repeat himself, but I felt like this project was asking for something similar, but it just felt at a lot of levels like it couldn't quite lock into a scale or a center in a way.
Yeah, and one thing that threw me off about it, even though I liked it quite a lot, was that there were just so many musical numbers. And
Yes.
at one point there was, and usually I'm not one to complain about that, but they were all very similar.
Yep.
So like at one point in the middle of the movie, there's like three Ricky performances in a row in the bar,
Yes.
and I was like,
Yes.
what is happening? Are
What are
they
we doing?
like are we is this meant to be like one of those like shots that lasts 5 seconds in an old movie where you see the calendar days flying by? Like what is happening?
Totally. And I know that Jonathan Demme loves to just fire up the jukebox. Like,
Yes.
it seemed like half of the truth about Charlie was just people dancing in some Parisian club. But this did feel like let's watch Meryl Streep put over these songs. And in a lot of ways, I felt like the movie got sort of stuck on, like, let's watch Meryl Streep disappear into a new kind of character versus let's be completely conscious of watching our beloved actress do something we haven't watched her do before. Mm-hmm. And so I felt a little stranded between getting into the movie and just being shown it, I guess, by the movie makers. Like, look what she's doing. I see what she's doing.
But don't you think that's the problem with many of her vehicles at this point?
I do, but I guess since I saw it a couple weeks after it came out, I had heard a lot of, I'd gotten the impression that this was going to be less reverential of her in that way, or more sort of just like a down and dirtier movie. And I actually probably liked her less in it than I have in, it was like a doubt level performance for me. So I wasn't crazy about her anyway, but the movie did seem to get stuck sometimes on just wanting to watch her do stuff. Although none of that applies for me to the end, which I just loved on all counts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so, you like her a lot in it, right?
I do. I'm really interested at this point. If she's going to work every year, if she seems to want to, I'm really interested. I don't know how it would happen, but I need her to work with somebody who does not revere her. I'm just really, I'm really curious to see what would happen if someone, because I do think, for example, like adaptation, Spike Jonze, that does not feel like he's any more into her than anyone else in the movie.
Yep.
Like, he doesn't seem to be at all like, ooh, I've got Meryl Streep in my movie.
Right.
And that's such a great performance.
Totally.
And I think, yeah. So, I mean, that would be, like, the last time that's happened where I felt like the filmmaker wasn't... I mean, she's been great since then and other things, like Devil Wears Prada and other things, but I think that's the last time I felt like that the filmmaker wasn't resting at all on the fact that he got her in the cast.
Right, or scared by it or something.
Right.
But, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess with her performance and with the movie as a whole, I just found them kind of rhetorical a lot of the time. Just, like, really, really aware of their own effects, like in the ways the script keeps gesturing toward class issues, which I'm always happy to see a U.S. movie do, but usually felt pretty ham-handed to me and sort of blunt. And I will understand that your daughter is depressed, even if she doesn't have like a Grey Gardens tumbleweed on her head and wears outfit. Like, and is she really going to go out exactly like that? Okay, I mean, all right. All the dynamics in the family, like I just didn't quite believe it most of the time. It felt really play acting to me.
Hmm. Okay. Which is funny since her own daughter played her daughter.
Well, and I wasn't sure that helped. You know, like, that was another thing that was like, part of this movie is about her disappearing into something, and part of it's about, remember when they made Sophie's Choice? Did you know she's her actual daughter? Like, yes, that is definitely Meryl Streep. I am very aware. Like, but even, I don't know how you felt about the daughter. Like, the daughter is so the portal into the movie, that whole storyline of how to take care of her. And then the second half of the movie doesn't seem interested in her at all, which I didn't really mind because I wasn't interested in her either. But it just felt like where Rachel getting married has, like, this 360 degree awareness of all these different fields of conflict, and you're just moving among them. This one seemed to like be trying to decide on one or something.
Yeah, that's true. Because it's very scattershot in that way.
Yeah.
Like when the stuff comes up with her gay son, for example.
Totally.
That seems very out of left field each time it happens.
Right.
Whereas it's not like everything is simmering and occasionally something boils.
Totally.
So yeah, I agree that it's faded for me a little bit. Like, I liked it a lot while I was watching it, but it hasn't aged as well as some of the others. Whereas Grandma, which I know you didn't love, I love it. It's aged really well for me. I haven't seen it again though, so I am curious to go see it again, because so it was quite a while ago that I saw it.
Okay.
Because I saw it at Sundance.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In January. And I just loved it then, and loved Lily, loved that it was, a character that I don't see in movies, like an older feminist lesbian poet, And the only thing that didn't work for me about it, I mean, I loved it, that it was like little road trip vignettes, because I think road trip movies have inherent charm if they do anything well, But the only thing that didn't work for me about it was the granddaughter,
Oh, really?
which is a major part of the movie, but I didn't, that performance didn't speak to me at all. It was kind of like the Mamie Gummer problem in Ricky and the Flash, where I just didn't feel connected to it, and yet it's the way that the story tells itself, But otherwise, I thought it was really funny, and I liked seeing all the actors pop up in small roles, and I just loved the whole character arc, and anyway, I loved it. But you did not, so tell us about that.
I guess I just felt like the granddaughter and the grandmother were so kind of scripted in this pretty determined way at the beginning. Like she was going to be sort of tremulous and nervous and like, Grandma, God. And Grandma was going to be shooting off these sort of, acidic comments that it just felt a little sticky to me, I guess. And then, I mean, not to like hit below the belt, but in that Pieces of April way, it just felt like in the first several encounters, it was like, here is a funny encounter that also teaches you that they were together for 38 years, or it just felt really expository. Then when we got to Ryan's allergic to my dislike for the movie. But when we got to Sam Elliott and then when we got to Marcia Gay Harden, I just thought it sort of raised everybody's game. I don't know that the script got better, but it just felt like Lily Tomlin was on working on a different register in those scenes because she kind of had to, and
Yeah,
I
this
was
is.
interested in those sequences.
Yeah, I'm like, this is a lesson filmmakers always. You cast the small roles just as importantly as the big roles,
Totally.
because the lead actor needs, really strong performers to bounce off of.
Yeah.
Because
And
there's no
strong
way there,
performance.
yeah, because there's no way Lily would be able to coast on just her own charisma when Sam Elliott is doing such a great job opposite her.
And like, and not a slight on the performers who were in the first part, but maybe I just didn't see them connecting to their roles in quite the same way, or it was hard for Laverne Cox to be much beyond what the script needed for Lily in that moment. Have you ever met anybody named Deathy before?
No.
That was weird. But yeah, and then when Marcia Gay Harden like shows up on a treadmill at her desk, I was like, are we really gonna do this in a movie that's been so kind of interested in feminism? We're gonna like find a corporate monster to hate. And I thought she, even more than this, figured out to not how to not do that. So that got me there by the end.
I guess my problem with the granddaughter is I didn't understand how she came from both Lily
Totally.
and Marcia Gay, because they were both playing such type A, like, I mean, in very different ways, but like very dominant, personalities. And I guess if you grow up with very dominant personalities, you could become a mouse, but something about it just didn't read right for me.
I totally see what you mean.
I guess, yeah, but I guess you could become a mouse if everybody around you was like controlling everything. I don't know. I guess from my own experiences, because people used to laugh at me and my friends about this because we all had such big personalities, my college group. And people were like, oh, it's horrible when you're all together because it's like, who can be louder than the other person to make sure they're the star of the conversation? So nobody's letting
Well, with
any.
friends like these, God, it's horrible when you guys get together.
No, I mean like outsiders are like, how can you guys like do this all the time? And nobody's, everybody's fighting for control of the room.
So were you the Lily Tomlin of that group or the Marcia Gay Harden?
was not the Lily Tomlin because I did have a filter. Maybe I was some other character.
Maybe you were some other character. You were always yourself, Nathaniel.
But would you recommend people go to these? Or is it, like, if you're interested, but it's missable?
I mean, I was moved enough by the end of Ricky, and I guess with all of them, I just sort of feel like I wouldn't be able to predict who would react in what way. Grandma seems the most kind of, maybe predictable in that way. You can imagine who among your friends like it and who wouldn't.
Right.
And the other ones are also, like, pushing in different directions and trying different things. That even when I was like, I don't know that that outfit fits, like, I was still interested in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess so. But the Blythe Danner movie, everybody should see.
Okay.
The other ones I felt sort of mixed about.
Okay. That's fair enough.
But you're a, like, strong recommender of all of them, right?
Well, I mean, Grandma in particular. But, I mean, I think Ricky is my least favorite of those three.
Okay.
But I was just, I mean, I'll See You in My Dreams was just the biggest surprise of them. Because yeah. I went into both Ricky and Grandma expecting to at least love parts of it, you know.
Yeah.
But that one I was just like, I'll go see this because for some reason, you know, old people love it. You know?
Yeah.
I wasn't really, like, interested in it. I thought, oh, it's one of these, like, indies where they got a semi-name actor and they made it on a shoestring. And, you know, there's tons of those all the time that nobody goes and sees.
Totally, yes.
So I thought, what is different about this? And it turned out to be really good.
Yeah.
And did you see The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
I haven't yet, but I loved Kyle's view on your site. So I do, that's next for me, probably.
I was really surprised by it. Because mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of Guy Ritchie at all. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, I'm so tired. You know how, like, late in the summer, I actually like action movies, and I think you like the good ones, too, from
mm-hmm.
past conversations. And, like, I thought Mission Impossible was super fun, the new one. Towards the end of the summer, I do get that thing where I'm like, oh, enough explosions and guns and, you know. And I was so dreading that about this, but I was interested to see it for the actresses. And then it just didn't care about the action scenes at all. It was all about the sort of banter between the characters.
Uh-huh.
And all the action seemed to be quick afterthoughts. Like, oh yeah, there was some shooting. Like, it just skips right over them and makes them so short.
Wow, that is so not what you expect from Ritchie.
Yeah, I mean, I was continually surprised by how, other than the opening scene, which is actually a good action scene,
mm-hmm.
it just seemed very much like the thing it was most interested in was the banter and the clothes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was a lot of fun. The actors were having fun with it. Elizabeth Debicki is great.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even know this going into it, but one of my first friends that I made in New York when I moved here is in the movie as Elizabeth Debicki's husband.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was just like, oh my God. Because I saw him, like, he lives in Italy, so, you know, I don't see him that often. Luca Calvani is his name. And he, but when he I saw him in 2010, I think, we went out and bought a baby stroller for his new baby or something.
Uh-huh.
So, like, that's the last time I actually, like, sat down and talked to him. And so I didn't know, like, he sometimes has, like, little roles in movies, but
uh-huh.
they're usually Italian movies, so they don't come here.
Okay.
So I was just completely taken off guard. So anyway, I was very excited.
That's amazing.
I was very excited about it. So I called him afterwards. So, and he was like, wow, it's so good to hear from you. So I'm hopefully going to have him do something on the site.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I like to be very, full disclosure when I like a film or an actor for reasons other than what's actually on the screen.
But it sounds like you were enjoying it anyway.
Oh, no, I was. It's just that, you know, like, this is, like, so unrelated to the movie. It was just exciting for me personally because, like, when you know an actor and you know how hard that career is.
Sure.
And then when they get a role that you were not expecting them to get, you're like, yes, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I had a version of that not really, but like in terms of extracurricular excitement, you know, I had just seen I'll See You in My Dreams on Sunday in DC, and like my mom and her friends were talking about how into Sam Elliott they've always been, and you know, whatever. And then we saw the movie and thought it was really great. And so then I went to this advanced screening of Grandma on Thursday night, and there's Sam Elliott.
Right.
And I was like, what? And he was so great. And of course,
in both movies too.
In both movies, he's really great. And I realized that clearly he's typed for almost everybody as like Western virility or something. Mm-hmm. But I've just grown up with him in movies led by these complicated, interesting women, and he is in the like Ruffalo camp of like, I'll play second banana to a woman, I'll play third banana to a woman. What do you want me to do?
Right.
And so I asked him about that, and he was like clearly really excited that he's something other than just like a Western guy for a lot of people, although he also said a lot of interesting stuff about being in all those Westerns. And and somebody in the back, like, you know, praised The Contender and said that was one of their favorite movies and feels like every part of the movie works and he watches it all the time. And Sam Elliott's like, yeah, it's too bad that guy's never made a good movie since, but sometimes that's just how it happens.
Oh. Ouch.
And then the first question was, you know, you've had such a great long career, is there anybody that you wish you could still work with? And he started on the whole, like, you know, as actors you're just always so happy to be called and there's so many, I wouldn't want to. No, actually that's not true. Julianne Moore, I mean she's, you know, I've just been watching her work forever and I just really wish. It's like, oh, okay, you're obviously one of our people.
That's great.
I already was going to ask you about actress sexual issues, and now you're telling me that it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and it's like, and hearing this makes me so happy because he was already going to be one of my nominees. I'm just spoiling it right now. He will definitely be in my best cameo category this year.
Uh-huh.
Because he's insanely good in that scene in Grandma.
Totally good.
Which
is such a well-written scene,
yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Have you seen anything else recently?
I saw The Gift. Did you see that?
I did not, no.
That's another one that's like, you might love it, hate it, be in the middle, but it is worth kind of checking it out, I would say. I didn't even feel complicated about how much I liked it for quite a long time, and then it started to get a little more literal, and then it's like, boom, literal! Like, so it definitely had a drop-off for me, but it was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Jason Bateman so much more attractive when he's playing an asshole? That's a complicated thing in my life.
Yeah, his the movie, he's got a Toronto as Nicole Kidman in it.
Oh, right.
So he just never stops working, that one.
He never stops working, and he directed that one too, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, did you see Tom at the Farm? I can't remember.
I saw that like a year ago at a festival.
Okay. Yeah, and I saw it 2 years ago at a festival.
Yeah, right.
It's been around forever. And it's finally in theaters, which is the curse of Xavier Dolan's movies.
Right.
Mommy is like the rare thing that came out the same year it actually debuted.
I know. It's amazing that like Tom at the Farm is not even like his longest time to release.
Right.
Whatever.
Did you like that one?
I guess this is my podcast of, like, sort of. It was interesting. Like, that reaction again. Did you like it?
I did, a lot. It was, I mean, not quite as much as Mommy, but it might be my second favorite by him.
Okay.
I just thought it was so, like, bracingly scary in weird ways.
Uh-huh.
And some of the editing impressed me just for being completely like off-putting and jagged in some of the, you know, more tense sequences. I don't completely, this is a weird thing to say because I'm a fan of his, but I don't completely love it when he's in his movies.
Uh-huh.
Like, in some ways I think this particular movie would have worked better with someone else in the leading role.
Mm-hmm.
But which I know he hates when people say stuff like that, but in this case, I thought it was true.
Well, if we try to step around all the things he hates, what will we talk about?
Right.
I would have just settled for same actor but different hair. That would have been nice.
Oh, yeah, that hair, that wig was a problem. And then it wasn't a wig sometimes, and other times it was. That was the vibe I got from it.
Totally baffling.
Yeah. The other thing I saw recently was Woman in Gold DVD.
Oh, no.
Did you ever see that?
Out of your entries. No, I still haven't, even though you were trying to trick me and make me do it. The whole Tatiana Maslany enthusiasm was starting to tingle in me. Like, shit, stop.
Yeah, it's really bad. I'm, like, just curious about talking to people about it just because I was just like, what is this? So that was the other thing that I saw recently. Oh, and I'm happy to report, since we were talking about Tom of the Farm and festival movies opening up later, this lesbian movie from last year's festivals called Sand Dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Is opening in theaters.
Is it really?
Later, like in a couple months, yeah.
Oh, that's
so
good.
So, with Geraldine Chaplin as the lead. And that, it's not, it has some issues, like a lot of, you know, indies, but, and, yeah. And a lot of big budget movies, but it's just something that you wouldn't normally see at all. Like, it's very, like, class specific.
Yeah.
And it's about sort of, yeah, how much of relationships of disparate classes are exploitation,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and the same way it's about that, it's also about sort of like foreigners sort of exploiting, rich foreigners exploiting lands that they move to. It's interesting.
I really liked it too for all those reasons, and it was interesting to, you know, I've seen comparable plots with like older women tourists picking up like hot young studs and. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all seen 8 million movies about old guys picking up young women. But, like, to have it be two women did push that dynamic in ways I hadn't really seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I liked the filmmaking a lot. I agree with you that it maybe could have had a clearer... I don't know if this was one of your issues. Like, it seemed like it could have had a slightly clearer view of the woman... I don't remember what island. Was it Cuba? Puerto Rico?
I think it was Dominican Republic.
Okay, I'm doing well. The Caribbean woman, shall we say, I would have liked to spend a little more time with, but I really liked that one. And I saw it at a festival a year ago, and then I noticed that the LGBT festival in Chicago is going to be showing it in September. It's like, oof, they're really still trying to get something to happen for that. So I'm so happy to hear that they did get something to happen.
Yeah,
for
they got picked up.
Oh, good.
I was surprised. I just got the email like this week that it's going to be released. So
cool. She was, so she won the Best Actress Prize at the Chicago Film Festival, Geraldine Chaplin.
Oh, okay.
And she Skyped into the ceremony, and it was like 2 a.m. Paris time, and so she whispered her whole speech because she didn't want to wake anybody up, even though at some point she said, like, of course, what I really want to say is, and then she screamed louder than I've almost heard almost anybody scream ever. So people in that hotel definitely thought someone was being murdered.
I love all these anecdotes from these. I need to go to more screenings with the actual people there.
Well, she was in France, you know.
No, but I mean, Skyping in is still being there.
Oh, yeah,
in a way.
Got it. Right. Yes.
And your true. Sam Elliott story.
Yeah. Oof. Sam Elliott told me I seemed like a stand-up guy, so from now on, I'm good. You know, I've hit peak.
Yeah, he's somebody peak. You want a character reference from. He has that sort of integrity on screen.
Did you know he was married to Catherine Ross?
I knew they were...
From The Graduate?
I knew they were a couple, but I didn't realize that they were... I knew they had dated, but I didn't really realize they were married. Are they still married?
Yeah. He's her fifth husband, and I think she's the only person he's ever been married to, but they've been together for 30 years now.
Wow.
And he mentioned at some point, you know, in that same answer about who would you want to work with, and after Julianne Moore, he said, actually, you know, most of the people that I would probably be on my list are women. I've gotten to work with my wife, Catherine, a couple times. It was really great. I didn't know who he was talking about.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, when I was doing the 79 thing where I was, like, doing the context of the year, like the vintage uh-huh. stuff, when I was looking for magazine covers for that mosaic...
Oh, yeah.
Him and Catherine Ross were on a ton of magazine covers.
They did this horror movie together that year, which is how they met.
Oh, okay. So it was the cover of Playgirl, actually, that I used.
I know.
It was Sam Elliott and Catherine Ross. So, I knew they were, like, a hot couple from that cover, but I didn't really realize that they'd gotten married and stayed together.
And have remained a hot couple. Yeah. Way to go.
Yeah, aged very well.
Yeah. So I can skip Woman in Gold, though, right?
Because, yeah, of course. Honestly. Of course. Okay. It's terrible. Like, Helen Mirren phones it in. Ryan Reynolds is awful. Katie Holmes is Katie Holmes, you know?
And I have a friend who thinks I'm too hard on Helen Mirren, and, like, every couple of weeks he just sends me a text that's a JPEG of her from the Queen, because he's just trying to help. And, you know, so he wanted to go see that a couple months ago. I was like, I just absolutely not. I don't know. No. Is she not in, like, De Niro Pacino territory at this point, where I'm like, I don't even know how you pick. I don't even know if you do pick. It just seems like you just do all the things, and it's usually the same. I don't
know. Well, yeah, and then she keeps winning awards for it.
Yeah.
Because she did that Broadway play where she played the Queen again.
Yep.
And people are like, don't you want to see that? When I was trying to see all those things before the Tony Awards, and I was like, no, sitting there for two and a half hours and watching her stand on stage as the Queen, no.
I have done that. I have seen that. It was called something else.
Well, okay, we should probably wrap up.
We should. Okay.
So, thanks for chatting about all these movies. We do get through a lot of movies when it's just two.
Well, thank God there have been like 8 leading lady vehicles, so we could trust we would see them all.
Right. Yeah, we're being very timely with this. I'll see you in my dreams in Ricky and the Flash.
Yeah.
We're right in the now, Nick.
Oh, whatever. I was just with my family who were like, when's that Meryl Streep movie coming out? Or when is that Pixar movie coming out?
It's so funny to me, but that's so true. Like, when I talk to people who aren't obsessed with movies, they never seem to know anything about what's out. And I'm like, don't you have a TV? Like, they advertise movies.
Then the winner was my dad, who this weekend said, what is the name of that movie where Gene Kelly is, like, stomping around and, like, singing in the rain? Is that An American in Paris? No. You're so warm. You're so warm right now.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll talk to you next week. Next week is the SmackDown. Next Sunday.
Oh, right.
And then the week after that, we will have a special Summer in Review edition.
Yay.
So stay tuned.